Right From The Left post. I don't know if you could hear the music, but if you did, type it in. My name is Linda, and I am broadcasting from Oceanside. Great day today. It's beautiful, a little hot and humid for me, but it's gorgeous. We are brought to us here on this station by PatriotFamilies.com. Hope you guys can hear me. Please let me know if you can, because I don't know. Headset hopefully is working. I'm going to type in. So anyway, we are live, and I would love to know if you guys can hear me. If you can, please type in or call or whatever. Calling in would be 646-378-0321. Okay, something's wrong. All right, something's wrong. Okay. You are going to, oh, you were in so much trouble. Okay, I don't know if you could hear the song, but I tried. I put my music on. And anyway, so there's so much going on. It is just astounding. I have to give a hat tip earlier to Glenn Beck, because in my darkest hour, he makes me laugh. And he was speaking about the situation in Egypt and in Libya, where they, I believe in Egypt, where they attacked the embassy and they took the American flag down and they burned that one and they put up a flag. Apparently it was a black flag and it said, "There is one God and he is Allah." And so Glenn says, and I'm quoting, sort of paraphrasing, he says, well, there is a different God. And if we're still under the protection of divine providence, you're about to meet that God of Abraham. So anyway, I thought that was kind of cool. There was a... exactly, good one. Forward 2012, yes, in the Communist Manifesto. Anyway, so much is going on. I did invite the gentleman who was out at the rally, and he's just drinking the Kool-Aid, and I did want to meet him here on the battlefield of ideas. I got an email back from him saying something about, you know, the opposite of freedom is the fossil fuels, and they actually believe this stuff, that they're only getting one side of the story. He was getting information not only from the Sierra Club, but he was getting the information from what's called the Earth Science textbooks. Well, he's probably never heard of Dr. Singer or Lord Monckton, but nonetheless, he says, parking is expensive. And he's talking about the opposite of freedom. And I just deleted the email because I couldn't deal with it much further than that. So hopefully, you know, I don't know if he'll join us. I've sent him all the blasts, all the links to the show. I also came across an interesting one. This is a little bit of history and something we should think about, because this does deal with the Federal Reserve System. And it goes back a few years, and it said, who stole America? This was actually written by Dannemeyer, U.S. Congressman, in, not sure what year it was, but he was a congressman between 1979 and 1992. And it says, if you want to take over a country, one of the first things you do is to seize control of the money supply. Jacob Schiff was the son of a Jewish rabbi born in Frankfurt, Germany. He was sent to America in the late 19th century by the European Rothschild financial dynasty. One of his assigned tasks was to seize control of the money supply of the U.S. government. At that time, it was under the control of the U.S. Congress pursuant to Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, which states, "The Congress shall have power to coin money and regulate the value thereof." Baron Rothschild had stated this truism in the 19th century: give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes the laws. Jacob Schiff began his quest to take over the money supply of America by purchasing an interest in a banking concern in Indiana called Kuhn and Loeb, L-O-E-B. He married the daughter of Loeb, bought out the interest of Kuhn, and as sole owner of Kuhn and Loeb, moved the business to New York in the late 19th century. Jacob Schiff was not exactly welcomed with open arms by the financial potentates led by the House of Morgan, then controlling the financial markets in New York. Schiff, as the Rothschilds' agent in America, gradually was able to build a working relationship with the other banking houses in New York by sharing some Rothschild bonds and stock business with them. Schiff was so successful in being accepted as a player in the New York banking scene that in 1908, he was among a handful of New York bankers who gathered at Jekyll Island on one of the House of Morgan's homes located in Georgia. These financial wizards plotted to take over the money supply of America. They had no small task before them. They needed to get America to pass their hatched plan called the Federal Reserve System, which was nothing more than a private group of bankers. It was not then, nor has it ever been, part of the U.S. government. Some of the stockholders included the Rothschilds of London and Berlin, Lazard Brothers of Paris, Israel Moses Seif of Italy, Kuhn, Loeb, and Warburg of Germany, and the Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs, and the Rockefeller families of New York. The congressional stooge present at the meeting in 1908 at Jekyll Island was Senator Nelson Aldrich of New York. He was assigned the task of shepherding the outright theft of the U.S. money supply system called the Federal Reserve Act through Congress. On December 23, 1913, he delivered in spades, 2 days before Christmas, which is a good time to have Congress debate, and vote on a major piece of legislation in your desire, if your desire is to minimize the desire of members of Congress to really understand what they are voting on. The reason is not hard to find. Members of Congress have families and want to get home for Christmas like everybody else. The Federal Reserve Act was passed by a vote of 298-60 in the House of Representatives and in the Senate by a majority, and was sent to the White House for the signature of President Woodrow Wilson. How President Wilson was elected in 1912 was a part of the conspiracy organized by Jacob Schiff and his New York banking fraternity at the meeting at Jekyll Island in Georgia in 1908. I thought it was 1910, but I'm not going to quibble about the dates here. President Robert Taft, a well-respected Republican, was running for re-election in the presidential election scheduled for 1912. He was on to the theft of our money supply organized by Jacob Schiff and his New York City banking friends. If President Taft was re-elected in 1912, it was clear that he would veto any bill passed by Congress to create the privately owned Federal Reserve Act. The conspirators led by Jacob Schiff enlisted the help of former President Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, and convinced him to run on the third party Bull Moose ticket and split the Republican vote. The scheme worked, and Woodrow Wilson was elected president in the 1912 election, and when the Federal Reserve Act came to his desk in 1913, he rewarded his bankers and signed the act into law. Almost, in 1913, the principal means of communicating to the people of America what Congress was doing were newspapers. The newspapers did not report this biggest theft in the 20th century at all. Okay, here we go. I'm going to pick you up, Ron. Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, darling. I read that when you sent it the other day, and yeah, that's basically the entire story of, you know, the creature of Jekyll Island. And I don't remember if G. Edward Griffin mentioned in the book or in the video that, you know, they brought Teddy Roosevelt in and split the Republican vote.
That's when the
Bull Moose Party was formed.
Right, which was then called the Progressives. Let's get real. We know now that the right-left paradigm is just bunk. I mean, my God, these people.
Well, it's total garbage. Once you, it's cognitive dissonance. And I say that a lot, and I think people don't really fully understand what that means. And I sent a link to a new 9/11 documentary that actually aired on PBS.
Wow.
And it's by the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. That is the best documentary I've ever seen put together.
And you sent it already to all of us?
I did, and I'll repost it again.
Fabulous.
But at the end of the video, they talked to several professional psychologists and psychiatrists about why people automatically reject the truth in 9/11 and its cognitive dissonance. They don't want to believe, they cannot allow themselves to believe that the government that they think is there to protect them could do something to harm an American citizen. It shatters their whole worldview and everything they know and believe in.
Right.
That's why I think that allegory of the cave is so important, because that is exactly, exactly what goes on. And this is why people can't accept the truth.
Exactly. This is what has led me to believe, when you talking about cognitive dissonance and lack of critical thinking, the allegory of the cave, why Mitt Romney believes the way he does, why so many people are drinking Kool-Aid and literally drowning in it. Someone gave me the email this afternoon talking about parking structures or stuff. I was just beyond myself. So I'm about to send him that little video of the allegory of the cave, and he'll probably never speak to me again. But you know what?
You're really choppy, hon.
Oh, okay. I don't know why. It's a brand new headset.
Do you have your volume turned up on your computer at all?
Okay, I've got it turned off now.
That's way better. Sometimes that causes a lot of feedback and really weird issues, so.
Okay. Yeah, because I have no, as far as I know, I don't think I have any other.
Yeah, no, you're loud and clear now.
Okay, I think that I just had to unhook a couple things and go.
Oh, that's even way better.
Okay, so that's what I need to do every time, is unplug that stupid Skype camera, because it's probably garbling. Okay, so what the problem is, these people, you know, I would love to meet these guys on the battlefield of ideas and challenge them on a few things, and of course be polite to them and try to, you know, maybe school them, but you get to a point when you see the stuff that the dribble that they send to you in emails and the things that they say, it's your task is so daunting. I don't even know where to start with them. Sometimes I think I have to give up on certain ones. I don't know. I mean,
and you know, I have to admit, I've had a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I worked very diligently over the years with my stepmother. And I know her, so I know her heart's in the right place. It's just that her thought process is skewed because she believes something that is not accurate. And so the way I learned that I had to approach her is I had to strike the conversation on a subject that she knew about. And in particular, we would talk a lot about the Bible, okay?
Sure.
And so as we would be discussing it, I would lead her down the path with, okay, you know that man cannot serve two masters, right? That's biblical. Correct.
Okay.
She agrees with that. And so we end up at the point, you get them agreeing, and they're walking down now the path that you want to lead them down. To see the error, they have to get it themselves.
Sure.
And so I would get to the point where I said, okay, if you believe that man cannot serve two masters and that government was not put on the earth to institute God's law, and we already know that we can't keep God's law,
right?
Then if we're following government and expecting government to be our leader, don't you think that's rejecting God and not following his rule, his law, his lead, not putting him first? And that would get her thinking, and she'd say, well, and she'd have to think about it. And then the next time we'd have a conversation, she understood more where I was coming from, and it made it much easier. She's come a long way, very long way.
Well, here's my issue with the folks, you know, when they're talking about this fake science, which is what I call it. They're only getting one side of the story, and it's all from every single avenue, every single faction on the left, which would be the Sierra Club or the Greenpeace or the Earth Science, you know, indoctrination magazines, and they will not look at the other side. This is what bothers me. It's like I don't think that they care about the truth. They just buy this Kool-Aid and that's it. And then their minds are completely cloistered and closed forever. It's like a steel trap, if that makes sense.
No, you're absolutely right. And see, when what happens is people get so deeply rooted. And
right.
I'm putting a link
okay.
into that 9/11
yes.
Video.
Thank
I'm telling you.
You
that is the most fabulous thing. And the fact that it aired on PBS is tremendous. But back to what I was saying, people get so entrenched in their belief. They formulate their entire lives
uh-huh.
around a foundational set of beliefs. And those beliefs, if they're based off of something other than the truth, and you try to expose that to those people,
right.
they will resist it. They will fight you with every
yep.
ounce of their being because it threatens their entire reality.
They're in the cave.
They are in the cave. And you've been outside. You've seen reality. And you want them to experience it. And you know that they're not. And you're going in there and they think you're nuts. And they will push and fight. And this is why, you know, when I started out on Patriot Families, I was always telling everyone, guys, you want answers, and I can't give you the answers. I cannot give you the answer. You have to find it
right.
for yourself. I can only tell you what I know, okay, and what I believe to be the truth. It's up to you. You're the one that has to have that light bulb moment.
Right.
And I have been privileged.
I know.
To see that occur with several folks in our group,
Patriot Family,
where that light
yes.
bulb goes ding, and I'm like, "Tah, she got it, okay." And
well,
once those things happen, it's amazing how rapidly we begin to see all the fallacy. It's like the scales falling away from the eyes.
I know.
Now
we
have eyes that see and ears that hear, and the revelations just keep coming.
Well, plus. And, you know, like what I would have liked to have asked this gentleman was, you know, do you believe that man can govern himself? Secondly, do you know where unalienable rights come from? And further, do you know what that word means? Which I pretty much kind of told him, and that's why he was sending me his diatribe later. I don't think he's decided to come aboard the show. I don't know. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, how do you define freedom? When you're just lumping it into dealing with how much something costs, and then it's freedom for people who think the way you do, but not for those who disagree with you. That's
right.
not freedom, and
no,
that's fascism. And
it's
and
a double standard.
Well, and I don't think they get it. And the other thing I would say to this person is, now if you live in, you know, South America or Canada or Australia or any place on this planet, or you go take a trip to the moon, does 2 + 2 still equal 4 wherever the heck you are? Now, that's rooted in truth. Doesn't matter where you are, the truth is still the truth. I mean, if that's the kind of world you want to live in, to go by the, you know, what's factual.
Well, now, hold on a minute. I'm going to tell you what some of the intellectuals are going to argue with you, okay, because I've seen this argument. 2 + 2 = 4 only if you're dealing in base 10 math. There's base 4, there's always an excuse. I'm just telling you.
I'm just trying to be simple on this particular point. But
I understand.
I think the problem is they cannot connect the dots between what they are proposing with this Agenda 21 and all this animosity towards fossil fuels and all the rest of this garbage. They cannot connect the dots that this is rooted in pure communist thought. This is the most egregious fascist thinking that I've ever seen. Now, I don't care if you're on the moon or Jupiter, communism is going to fail miserably and it's going to end in darkness, death, misery, and hell. If that's what I was trying to convey or would like to convey to people, if 2 + 2 = 4 any place in the universe, communism is going to fail anywhere in the universe just as miserably. It does not matter the location. That's my point. But they cannot make the connection between this Agenda 21 and the evils of communism. They can't do it.
Well, you're right. And look, the reality of the situation is this. No matter what name we want to hang on it, fascism, communism,
right.
socialism, capitalism, okay?
Tyranny.
Any of them. The problem is, if you remove all those stigmatisms, all those labels, and we just look at the socioeconomic relationship of human beings on the planet,
right,
and go back through history, regardless of what the mechanism was, it is human nature that we cannot be herded into large block groups to be controlled for any length of time. Because eventually, no matter how concrete and iron-fisted the control is, the human spirit will rise up and rebel against it.
And someone's going to make their way out of that cave.
Correct. You can't, you know, it's like the old saying, you know, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time.
Absolutely. It's just frustrating. I've tried to come up with my own ways to explain things to people, or at least try. But if they're unwilling to even listen to just basic principles of, you know, and looking at one set of fact sheets to another, which would be, you know, you could take Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, and then you could put it right alongside Agenda 21. If you can't see the similarities, then I don't know. There's no help.
Well, and in all honesty, and I know what you mean, because you would think that with all of the massive volumes of writing and facts that we have on the subject,
right,
that someone, somewhere, would be able to, at some point in time, coin a simple phrase that would speak reality to the situation very simply and succinctly without being too terribly complicated.
Right.
And they have, in my humble opinion, and it's in the Bible. Man cannot serve two masters. Now, whether you believe that that master be God or the state, or if you just boil it down to an even smaller level, you cannot serve your own self-interests and the state all the time. It's not possible.
It's impossible. Well, it would be like trying to be, you could even bring it further down to, you know, common denominators, that a person who would be a mom to a small baby cannot take care of a child properly and go out and party till 3 a.m. You can't.
Right. I mean,
it's impossible.
It's not possible for some one person to be everything to anyone else. It's just not possible. We can't do it. And we should stop trying to.
I know.
The best we could do, I had a great conversation with a couple of ladies that were on a show, and the one lady was talking about people being selfish. And I said, you know, being selfish isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
And she says, how do you mean? I said, if everyone on this planet were completely, totally selfish and self-absorbed, and they never gave a single consideration to anybody else around them, we would have world peace. You think about that. If you weren't concerned with anybody else but you, okay? You wouldn't be worried about what your neighbor's doing and whether or not you want to allow him to do that, or whether or not the government should allow him to do that. The only focus in your whole life would be you. And if you run across someone that doesn't fit into your needs, you just walk away because you're so focused on you. You don't have time to waste time
for that.
On someone that is not beneficial to you.
Well, your argument goes to Milton Friedman's arguments on the same subject, and I know the Ayn Rand Center believes the same way. Of course you have self-interest, and you are selfish because that's what, you know, equals capitalism or production. Yeah, I mean, you have to go out and you get to fish, whether you get it from, you know, your bare hands or you have a spear or whatever. You're hungry, you need to eat. And if you are selfish or have self-interest in the sense of being a capitalist and an entrepreneur, you are going to benefit society whether you want to or not. It's just going to happen. It's an end result.
See, that's the thing that the socialists can't get, and that's the big lie of the progressive liberal socialist ideology, is that while it might be theft, you might be stealing from your neighbor, but you're doing it for their own good and for the benefit of others. Well, that's a bunch of hogwash.
Yep, it's all collectivism, I know.
You do not cause a trespass on anyone for the benefit of another. That's BS. You're doing it for your own self-satisfaction, your own,
sure.
Because you believe that it makes you a better person. The reality is, and I had a lady when I was on the other network, she was just anti-money. It was all money. Money was the root of all evil. And I told her, I said, you don't understand. You know, I work in the service industry. I repair people's cars. Not everyone has the ability to fix their car.
Right.
I happen to have that ability. So when they come to me, I'm providing a service. I am serving them. Not
right.
out of my own personal greed, okay, or selfishness, but my service to them allows them to serve me. It's mutually beneficial.
Yeah, exactly. It's what free markets are all about. It's
exactly.
voluntary association.
Precisely.
That's the Milton Friedman ideology, which makes a whole lot of sense. And I know that our founders love that idea, but we haven't seen it in this country since, you know, what? My mother used to say Christ was a corporal. I mean, absolutely a long, long time. So how can you even have the argument? How can they say capitalism is evil? They don't even know what it is. I mean, I'll just pick up a book because that's the only place you're going to find it now is in a book, you know, or some semblance of it. It's a sad fact. I mean, we have some semblance of it because we still get to have some free voluntary trade with one another. But having the government left to its own devices and the damn EPA, that'll go by the wayside soon. Believe that. The rest.
Well, and that's exactly why, you know, Thomas Jefferson penned that we hold these truths to be self-evident.
I know.
Because it doesn't take a genius. It doesn't take someone who's had, you know, years of graduate school or undergraduate school, or even someone who's been through preparatory school, okay, to recognize the fact that we tend to gravitate towards people who are beneficial to us,
mm-hmm.
and we, in turn, are beneficial to them. That's how we establish and build friendships. Every association, every relationship that we enter into in this life is either beneficial or it's not beneficial. And the ones that aren't beneficial, if there's no benefit to it, we leave them in the dust quite quickly.
Right.
Whether we recognize that fact or not is a whole nother subject.
Right. Well, it's almost like kids learning how to not put their hand on a stove when it's hot. I'm not going to do that too many more times. You start to get to learn after a while. Yeah, you do learn your lessons, hopefully.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's why there's a Patriot Families, because we all benefit from the other's presence and membership, fellowship. We
sure.
all are of like mind, not on every single topic or every single subject, but on the really important, fundamental, basic things.
Sure.
We all have roughly the same beliefs. And so we gain a benefit mentally from
yeah.
having these exchanges, talking to one another, discussing the various issues and problems that we see. We gain mutual benefit or we wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
And that's why, you know, we've got 390 members and routinely we see the same 5, 6, 8 people show up for
right.
the radio programs and show up in the chat room or posting blogs. Because the rest of the folks are what I would call sunshine patriots.
Yeah, it's very sad because I think they're missing out a lot. Even if they would come in maybe twice a week or something like that, they would gain so much. I've learned, and I'm learning every day because of the exchanges we all get to have on the air, how to frame an argument, because I come up against these people and my head just boils over. And I have to learn how to be calm and start figuring out what's my new method to get them to see the truth, or at least look at it, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
It's tough.
That is the hardest thing. And what you need to recognize when you go in and you begin and someone is giving you just horse manure talking points,
mm-hmm.
and you just want to reach out and throttle them, okay? You need to be able to take stock, just breathe deep for a moment and recognize that the way you feel at that moment in time, you feel as though you're personally being attacked. It's not about the issue. It's personal. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because you know the truth, and
right.
you hold it so dear and so close. Well, that's exactly the way your adversary standing across from you feels about everything you're telling them. So you've got to try and, in your mind, mm-hmm. formulate a way in which you can befriend that person.
Right.
And they'll open that door. And once they open that door, I mean, you've got to establish some trust and
sure.
show that you're not the adversary. You're not trying to attack them. That was one of the hardest things for me to learn. And especially, my first lesson was in a courtroom defending myself. And so I was being attacked, and it was very personal.
Wow.
And I learned a lot from that experience.
Sure. Unbelievable. I'm going to finish this little piece up, and then we can go back to all the it's just so frustrating. And what I keep thinking I need to do is I need to go back into my folder of A21 stuff and pull out small paragraphs of truth and show both sides of the argument, because I'm pulling from both sides, and quote the people who have been who hatched these plans literally, and you know, just try to draw some kind of parallels for this individual. I'm hoping that it will work. We'll see. Yeah, because the last thing he said in the email was, I hope we can agree to disagree. I thought I would throw up, but that's what he said. Anyway, so this last piece of this thing was, it says, with the 1913 part, the newspapers did not report the biggest theft in the 20th century at all. Almost a century later, we Americans are still experiencing the consequences of this theft of our money supply in 1913 by transferring control of it to a private elitist banking families residing mostly in Europe and some in America. It is not an exaggeration to say that these are the consequences of this historic event. The American people lost control of how and to what extent Congress spends our money. Congressional deficits are financed by irresponsibly expanding the money supply by the privately owned Federal Reserve System, which results over time in an inflationary spiral which will lead to a total collapse of the dollar and the destruction of the middle class. I believe this guy wrote this in 2007. America disavowed the advice of George Washington to avoid entangling alliances with other countries and focus our energies on protecting the interests of the American people. The creation of Imperial America seeks to control the world and results in perpetual war to achieve perpetual peace. It goes by the name of the New World Order, led by the Council on Foreign Relations. Oh, I love those guys. GAG. This CFR has over 3,000 members. Unbelievable. And then I know we touched yesterday on the Illuminati, so there was another piece, and it said, international banks, bankers, top globalists, heads of New World Order, in order of importance, Rothschild family, Warburg family, Schiff family, Oppenheimer, Royal Family of England, it looks like Saxe, Saxe-Coburg, Gotha family, Rockefeller family, Morgan family, Harriman family, Carnegie family. The Rothschilds, by far the most influential, holding approximately half of all the world's wealth. Anyway, they talk about all these formulas. I guess this was done. This was another one quote by, I think, G. Edward Griffin from Jekyll Island. War is the ultimate discipline to any government. Survival from war becomes primary. Everything else is secondary. There's just, I'm going to have to find this again, and it's got a list of the banks. Rothschild's Bank of London and Berlin. I think I had mentioned all. Yeah, Goldman Sachs of New York. It's just amazing what's happening, and people don't know any of this stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and try to get those things posted to whomever, and maybe on Patriot Families. I never know where to go with these people, and it's hard. But I'm going to go ahead and pull out my information that I can try to put these paragraphs together, and that way maybe they can connect a dot or two. I don't know if they're too far gone. It's bizarre.
Well, it's, you know,
go ahead.
I was going to say, we've got a great conversation going on in the chat room, and I have all the respect in the world for Mike. And, you know, the thing is, you can win an argument and still lose. And what I mean is that if you go into a battle with an opponent and he believes he's got the truth and you believe you've got the truth and you butt heads for an hour and you come out and you both still believe that you're right, you haven't won anything, even though you might be the guy that is right.
Yeah,
it matters not. What wins the day is when you can impart into that individual at least a seed of doubt,
uh-huh,
and they begin to look and search, because that's when, if you can just put a little chink in the armor.
Right, right.
Okay, you don't have to come out on top as they're going to agree with everything
right.
you say. That's just not going to happen most of the time. But if you can plant that seed of doubt, and that seed of doubt causes them to enter into some research. This
yes.
is exactly what happened to me, okay, when someone came to me and told me something that I knew for a fact was just total BS. And I'm the kind of person that I will go out of my way to prove you wrong when I know that I'm right. And, you know, darned if it didn't turn out, I was dead wrong.
Wow.
And ended up, he was right. And I had to humbly admit to him. But, at the same time, he made me think. And
sure.
he made me ask questions that I hadn't asked before, because I had always just taken things for granted.
Wow. 214, you're on the air.
I'd heard.
Hey, Linda.
Hey.
This is Daniel with Reclamation Project X.
How are you?
I am doing fine, and I was just calling in everything. He basically, while I was waiting on there, just that said what I was thinking. If you can just make the opponent think,
right,
then you've won.
Yep.
I think you're
and
right.
Everything.
So that's my next step, is to give the links to the places that he might go to, also the small paragraphs of quotes from the other side, from their own words, and then take it a little, you know, like spoon feeding people. And so, like, I'll wait a few days and then send another small paragraph, because I'm telling you, and
well,
I'm not
and
trying to insult their intelligence, but I do think that since they're still in that cave, I got to spoon
yeah.
feed them.
And, you know, well, another thing I had to learn, and it came from a very good friend of mine who watched me engaging people on a daily basis.
Right.
We have to be careful, because we're so eager to give them all the information they need. And he gave me the analogy that when I see an opening, when that little door cracks open
mm-hmm.
just a smidge, I'm like a bulldog. And he said, dude, it is like trying to get a drink from a fire hydrant.
Yep.
Okay,
that's...
because I just inundate them with information. And at that point, you get into information overload.
Yep.
And what most people will do is they'll just shut it off and they'll lose
oh, yeah.
interest.
Oh,
but
yeah.
we got to be careful just to
yeah.
give them a little bit. Just let them dangle their toes in the water. And,
yep.
you know, nature will take care of the rest.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go
well,
ahead,
Dan. With our organization, you know, we try to talk to both the left and the right. You know, I've been on Linda's show before and everything with Reclamation Project X.
Yeah.
And we found that, I mean, it's easy for us to talk to the right, you know, to the right, you know, they want exactly what we want. It's the left that is throwing up all the arguments. And we have, on a few of them, we've already won, you know, made them think. And you know, if we make them think, then they start coming back and asking questions. Once you get them
yep.
asking questions, you got them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Daniel, I mean, and it's not this whole left-right thing. Always bugs me because
uh-huh.
it is a left paradigm. And I had a guy call in to go on Monday that is an independent constitutionalist. He's so full of baloney, it's up to his ears. And he gave me, you know, progressive ideology after progressive ideology, believing that it was conservative. And, I mean, they just, you know, it's both sides of the aisle, if you will. They get completely out of sync, and they lose focus of the Constitution. One example is, you know, Mitt Romney has come out in the last week and said that he's not opposed to a value-added tax, that they're considering, you know, tax increases on the wealthiest Americans, or closing tax loopholes for the wealthy.
Yeah.
And he wants to fix Medicare and Medicaid, and that he wants to keep certain portions of Obamacare.
Yeah. He wants to replace it.
So here again is that flawed ideology that they believe that they're being conservative, and they're lost. They're totally lost.
Yeah, that caller you were speaking about 2 weeks ago, he was like a rhino on parade. I mean, that was poor thing. And he really, he believes in his ideology. And you can't, at that point, fault him for it. You just try to, you know, spoon feed the best you can and make your own arguments. And we're not all going to agree on everything, but you're right about the principles. And we've studied enough about the founding. And in fact, we've studied enough about the philosophers from whom they took their pages. My God, you have to go back to that. How else can you learn anything?
You go back to 380 BC and you'll find that
you got it.
I mean, it's right there.
Yeah. Oh, well, and another thing that we figured out, you know, that we've talked about is being left or right in the ideologies and everything, a lot of times it depends on the issue. Because a lot of people that are devout leftists and everything will have a conservative view on some issues, and vice versa.
Yes. Oh, I had a caller months and months ago that told me he was a fiscal conservative but a social liberal, and I told him he was full of BS. And I said, "You're just confused. You don't understand." And so we went for an entire hour on the program, just on focused on healthcare. And at the end of the program, he agreed. We had an agreement. I mean, we actually reached a resolution, and this was a guy that was, in his mind, staunchly liberal. And, you know, I walked him through step by step, and we ended all the way up at an insurance company being a middleman between the patient and the doctor. And that is the root cause of why your healthcare costs are so high. You know, the insurance company doesn't have the doctor's best interest in mind, nor does it have the patient's best interest in mind. It has its actuarial accounting best interest in mind. And that's all it has. And if we could reboot that framework.
Until people learn to put the people first, there is going to be nothing good that happens in this country.
Well, the freedom of the people. For the people.
Yeah,
exactly. And the constitutional principles, the Declaration of Independence, what the hell do you think they fought for? Just so
we can have these stupid
arguments
with our
now?
Founding fathers, you know the difference between Hamilton and Jefferson.
Well, yes. I know. But somebody spent 8 years on a battlefield, and they didn't do it for nothing.
Yes.
They didn't do it for this damn Romney care. They, like Ron said, and I have to agree with him on this one, if those poor guys were able to materialize themselves today, they'd wind up in Gitmo because of this evil government we have. They would take them out as terrorists, the rats. I hate, 95% of them, I'd like to just pinch their heads off. I know they'll be on my door in about 5 minutes, but I don't care. I'm so tired of it.
Yeah, but we're the same way. I mean, you know, me and Sid, you know, you've heard our background and everything. You know, me and Sid both feel we're going to be in the crosshairs, so, you know, very soon and everything as our organization grows. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. I mean, you know, until we can all stand up together and put the ideologies and the adjectives to the side, you know, it's going to take everybody standing up together, both left, right, black, white, whatever,
to get something done.
And that's what we're trying to do is break down that wall between.
You're absolutely right. And the problem is, and just like, you know, we're having the discussion in the chat room right now and on the program about healthcare, okay? And while healthcare is an important issue to everyone, maybe not, you know, the 18 and 19 and 20 somethings out there, but as we get older, it becomes more of an issue.
Yes.
It's not the fundamental issue at hand. The fundamental issue is, let's go all the way back to the beginning of the question. Does the government have the authority to dictate my healthcare? Period. That's the question.
Right.
We don't have to have the argument about all the intricacies of economics and how the whole system works within the framework of the box that's been hung around us. We don't have to prove anything. We just need to go back to the fundamental basis. And I think it boils down even further. The government does, where does the government get the authority to do to anyone what I personally don't have the authority to do to someone? Granted them that authority? Where did it come from?
Because the government granted themselves that authority and got the Supreme Court to back it up because they're all bought and paid for.
Right, yep. But and who gives the Supreme Court authority? I mean, the point is, I can't give to Linda the authority to go shoot her neighbor because I don't like him.
Exactly. That's.
But
that's
our president, our president has given himself the authority to assassinate not only whomever he pleases, but also American citizens, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad. Is
this
that Robert
is
on the line?
Illegal.
I can't tell.
It is me.
Oh,
how y'all
hi,
doing?
Robert.
Oh, Robert, I've got the greatest story for you. This is totally off topic, but I have to relate this to Robert because I know him. A dear friend of mine, his stepmother is Jewish, and she's an attorney, and she's very wealthy. She had her son's bar mitzvah right here in Atlanta at the Atlanta Aquarium. And she,
really?
They did it, yes, they did it in the morning. It cost her $70,000 for this bar mitzvah.
Oh my God.
Wow, she's great. She's a great mother.
And they're serving breakfast. And as they come out and they're serving breakfast, lo and behold, everyone has four strips of bacon on their plate.
Oh no.
She went absolutely hostile. And she's an attorney, mind you. And she told him in no uncertain terms, I absolutely did not order this, and I'm not paying for it. And then she turned to my friend, who's not Jewish, and said, can you believe all these damn Jews? They're eating the bacon.
That's funny.
I told you.
That's hysterical.
I told you they sneak.
They sneak it, yeah.
Yeah, they sneak
it. Sandwich.
That's what you call a headache. That's what you call a headed closet Jew.
I thought you would appreciate that, though. That was just, that tickled.
Oh,
that's good.
Uncle Rob, I believe, what did you think about the Libyan routine book today?
The Libya routine? Well, I think they've got it wrong. I think the flag they hoisted up over there in Libya at the U.S. Embassy says, forward, vote Obama 2012, but, what do I know?
Exactly. It's crazy. I guess poor Bibi Netanyahu can't get an audience with the president because the president's campaigning and playing golf and hanging out with the Muslim Brotherhood in the White House.
I could be mistaken, but I don't recall Gaddafi ever threatening to murder any of our ambassadors, much less carrying out such an act.
It's insane. Yeah, I think Glenn said it, that it's 1979 all over again. Unbelievable.
It's shades of that, and you know what? He's hitting the nail right on the head, only this time what he should have said is it's 1953 all over again. Because 1953, when we ousted Mossadegh and mm-hmm. put in the Shah, is what led to 1979. Just in the case of Libya, it didn't take the nut jobs quite as long to get around to carrying out their idiocy. And this just simply proves the point that I've been making for years. Our foreign policy, these guys embrace our foreign policy and think it's all so great and fine. Really? I think the ambassador's family would disagree with you on that.
Oh, my gosh. The whole thing is just...
Yeah.
It's really, really sad what's going on. And the people who are fomenting all of this stuff are just, talk about cave dwellers, please.
I would go so far as to say that I think the millions of people, the millions of families left who have had family members murdered because of a direct result of our interventionist foreign policy, would disagree that our foreign policy is wonderful and fabulous.
I've got hot seat too. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. How's everybody?
What's on your mind, my friend?
Oh, I'm finally glad you started talking about the embassy deal. Here we go again. Ron Paul is absolutely correct. Leave them, freeze the money, and let them go. And what I've been saying all along, it's a 64-year circle jerk in the Middle East. And I love these other hosts on BTR that had to give me a lecture this past weekend. We need to maintain the presence. We can't have a vacuum, a presence,
God.
Really. How intimidated did Egypt and Libya look last night and this morning? How intimidated are they by a big bad guns? Did you see any intimidation? I didn't see it.
I mean, look, I mean, it's quite simple. Our presence there is just simply presenting a target-rich environment. I mean, let's be honest and call
sure.
it exactly what it is. And
that's right.
So if we're willing, if we are, as Americans, if we are willing to send our young men and women into harm's way simply to be cannon fodder for political agendas, well, then I think we've got a fantastic foreign policy that's working swimmingly well.
Jeez.
If, however, our military purpose is to defend the United States of America and the Constitution, well, then I think it's been an abject failure for a very, very
long time.
And secondly, if we didn't have embassies in those rat holes in the first place, no Americans would have been killed yesterday over there, and we wouldn't have two embassies attacked because we shouldn't have them over there anyway. It's a waste of time. Again, it's a never-ending saga of ridiculousness and idiocracy. And we have to stop being a customer. As long as we're a customer of these idiots and providing them money to put
right.
on these programs, you know what? Hey.
You don't kill your customers.
I mean... Well, they don't care about that, though. They're animals, Ron. They don't
yeah.
care about dollars
Look,
and cents.
I understand that to a point, but we also have to recognize that we have created much mm-hmm. of this monster.
Oh, I'm not saying we haven't. But,
yeah.
but it's time to say goodnight. Close up the tent. No longer be a customer. Stop giving them money to fund this like this. And you know what? Let them kill each other.
Yeah.
That's what I... That's
and
right.
we are using our military as cannon fodder. And this is why,
crazy.
Once again... As I've said at nauseam, I cannot vote for either candidate that wants to continue the Middle East theater, which is what Romney wants to do. The next target is Iran. I mean, he's made that quite clear. And, you know, again, how long are we going to play this game? Let him go.
I'll tell you how long we're going to play this game until someone with a big enough stick called a thermonuclear device
mm-hmm.
gets tired of playing and raises the stakes in the game, and then it's all bets are off.
Well, then let's rock and roll. I guess it's what we need. But I'm this lame excuse. Look, what happened yesterday was not over a 14-minute amateur movie.
Correct.
No.
That was just
that's BS. Right.
First of all, it was our government saying that.
Correct.
Yeah. None of the terrorist groups said why they did it. It's coming out now, though, that it was Al-Qaeda, that it was organized, and
sure.
it was endorsed by money. And I'm telling you, it all comes from Saudi Arabia and Jordan, all of it.
Well, and the fact of the matter is...
was an 11-year anniversary. It was done on purpose, on 9/11, purposely, as another
yep.
kick in the face and to rub salt in the wounds. And the first thing that our apologetic administration says, oh, well, you know, we can't have free speech to hurt people's feelings. Oh, get out.
Right.
Just get out.
Right.
Please
yeah,
just get out.
Pretty nuts.
Yep. And you know, it reinforces the ideology that the United States was attacked on September 11th, 2001, by 19 Muslim hijackers on commercial airliners. BS, guys. I mean,
uh-huh.
we
yeah.
know it's BS.
Yep.
You just look at the facts of the situation, and you start connecting the dots. You know, I believe in Occam's razor, and that means
that
the simplest...
That was a false flag to put us into war so we would have presence in the Middle East.
Absolutely. It gave us a reason to bolster our presence in the Middle East, and all the generals and the boys get to go out and try out all their new toys. And the military-industrial complex has a cost-plus contract. And, hell, the only people that lose are the folks that are footing the bill and the folks that are being killed.
Exactly.
You know, if we would pull all of our soldiers back out of the Middle East and then stop buying oil from them, they would go broke and they would seize up in every part of their body to work because they would not have the money to do any terrorism.
Well, it's not even an oil, though, Daniel. It's the fact that we give foreign aid. We give welfare not just to our supposed allies, but to our enemies, for God's sakes. We give them the money to pull this off.
And let's not forget.
We've been giving billions of dollars to Libya every year for decades.
Millions. Yeah. Dude, the Federal Reserve Bank had $73.2 billion in outstanding loans to Libya when we went in through NATO. And let us not forget that NATO is the secondary arm of the U.S. military that we formed to combat the United Nations when we didn't agree with their ideologies.
Oh, let's not forget Pakistan either, those bastards. Excuse me.
Well, you remember back in 08, you know, Obama said we ought to be bombing Pakistan. Everybody got their panties in a wad, and what are we doing?
Yep.
Going back to 9/11, though, you know, when I was taking general psychology at USF, and my professor was talking about 9/11 and how much stress it caused the country, and he comes up, he says he was in the army, right? And he goes, well, while he was in the army, studying psychology to become a PhD, he shows us this plan of how the World Trade Center was going to be directly hit. He showed us not only the towers, right? Not only did he show us the towers, he showed exactly before where the planes were going to land and knock it down.
Well, the very idea that the planes hitting the towers is what brought them down is it defies logic.
That's right.
It defies physics. It defies architectural engineering.
Let's pretend for a moment. Pretend that 9/11 was completely legitimate. I put in a link, 39-minute, 41-second film by Fox News, no less. Not Alex Jones, not PJTV, not the reptilians.org, Fox News. And the entire 39 minutes and 41 seconds, the words Afghanistan and Iraq were mentioned zero times. Zero. So let's pretend 9/11 is all real. Everything happened the way it was. Well, why are we in Afghanistan and Iraq when they had nothing to do with it? Nothing.
It's
zero.
It's
crazy. No one can give me a bold-faced answer.
Well, you're right
about the war on terror, but you're in the wrong joint.
So, Mike, that...
No, if you were to hear who was responsible for it and everything, you have to start with Cheney.
But let's pretend he's not. Let's just pretend it was real.
I hear what Mike is saying, and the fact is that 17 of the 19 alleged hijackers were from Saudi Arabia.
Exactly.
So why is the focus on Iraq and Afghanistan? Oh, well, because presumably that's where the evil overlord Osama bin Laden, the CIA asset, was hiding.
Incorrect. He was in Pakistan the whole time. The whole
now,
time.
Never mind.
The one that took off in the airplane from the Washington airport the day of the on 9/11 after it happened?
Yeah, his family did. That's true.
His family, right. They flew out of Massachusetts. That was the only plane that was allowed to leave, by the way. The only civilian plane.
Yeah, and let's not even mention the fact of the interview of Frost with Bashir Bhutto, the lady that was assassinated over in India, when she said, yes, I'm talking about this one particular individual, the man who assassinated Osama bin Laden. I attended his funeral. And David Frost just blew right by the question or that comment as if it was, you know, oh, it's about 2:00, time to go to commercial break. Now, any journalist worth their salt would have said, excuse me, did you say you attended Osama bin Laden's funeral?
Yeah, well, the only reason why we're still in Afghanistan and the only reason why is because we're protecting all the opium for the
Correct.
Powers. Well,
don't forget the pipelines to the Caspian Sea too.
There now we're talking. about the Stans, the oil reserves and natural gas reserves in the Stans, the former Soviet Union, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. They're landlocked.
Turkmenistan.
If you go back to the time when a gentleman named William Jefferson Clinton was president, there was a young lady, a black lady, who worked for a oil company. The oil company's name is Unocal. And Unocal was in negotiations with, the Taliban to run a pipeline across Afghanistan. And it seems that some of the local warlords kept blowing the damn thing up. So we were paying protection money to the Taliban to handle these Afghani warlords. And don't you know that one of the guys that she worked closely with on this pipeline project all through the mid and late 90s was a guy named Hamid Karzai.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, imagine that. The of course, duly democratically elected president of Afghanistan. Come on, folks. You can't make this crap up.
Yep. Wow. Well, I want to thank you guys, and I want to, just since we're in the archives, Daniel, go ahead first and say your last piece.
Well, I just think that, you know, we all need to stand together and get every group that we're associated with to stand up and start speaking out, start lending, make it one big voice. Go to our website at www.reclamationprojectx.org. You know, email us there. We'll be the clearinghouse to get everybody started. But we need to get everybody standing up and telling the government that enough is enough. That we want our country back.
Thanks, Daniel. We can do that. Be blessed. And Robert, do you have anything to say before we get out of here?
Go ahead and send me that website, Linda or Ron.
The reclamation.
Yeah, the reclamation talk. Yeah, please do. I want to read.
Daniel. I don't know if. I guess we could put it in Patriot Family Chat.
Okay. I'll switch over to Patriot Family Chat on that one.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Reclamationproject.org, isn't it?
ReclamationProjectX.org.
You got to have the X in there.
Mike got it
there.
I got
to have the X in there. You can Google Reclamation Project X, and it's the first thing up there.
Awesome. Awesome.
I will research it on it for you guys.
Thanks, Robert. Did you have anything to say also?
Nothing. It's Jimmy Carter all over again.
And Mike Hotze, what say you, sir?
Well, between Romney's response to Obamacare and what happened yesterday / early this morning, whatever it is, in my mind, it just proves my point once again. There is no way in hell that I am going to slam a vote down for either side of the aisle. The establishment, I'm done with it. And this just proves my point week after week.
Oh,
not to toot my own horn, toot, but the hot seat is right once again, and I'm out of the program. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid, and I'm not taking the blue pill. Bottom line.
Thanks, Mike.
Be you blessed. Got it. You
Ron,
too.
Ron, anything to add?
You know, I can reiterate what everyone's already said here, but, I'm with Daniel and Mike, and one of the things that I said the other night, and I honestly believe it, we have to begin challenging these people when they speak something that is not true. We can no longer simply just roll our eyes, wave our hand, and walk away. We need to get right back at them. And challenge them with the truth and with the facts, but we also have to do it in a non-adversarial fashion. Now, granted, there's going to be some of those folks that are an adversary and they come out swinging, and when they do, you call them out. You let them speak long enough until they spout one specific lie and nail them on it. And won't be able to give you a straight answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you guys, Ron and everybody here. We've got Daniel, Robert, Mike, and Ron, and everybody going in the chat room. They can't hear us. And I want to thank everyone, and God bless you. And I'll go over to Patriot Family Chat for a bit, and we'll carry on from there. We are in archives. God bless.
Don't forget to hide the bacon.
Yeah, right. Good one, Robert. Take care.
Yeah, I love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and drop everybody.